Welcome to the Science Update Podcast. I'm Bob Hirshon, and this is the podcast for October 2nd, 2009.
The Science Update Podcast is produced by AAAS, advancing science, serving society.
It's been a busy week for science news. Yesterday, scientists unveiled major details about Ardipithecus, the oldest known hominid skeleton ever discovered. What they found out could revise the evolution of the human family tree. Suzanne Bard's going to tell you about that, and I joined scientists from the Applied Physics Laboratory as they monitored the Messenger spacecraft's final flyby of the planet Mercury. We'll also delve into the possible origins of cosmetics and tell you why your shower isn't nearly as clean as you might think. So, Suzanne, tell me more about this great fossil find.
Well, the first remnants of the Ardipithecus fossil skeleton were actually discovered about 15 years ago in Ethiopia, and the scientists have been trying to piece together details about its anatomy, what kind of environment it lived in, and even information about its behavior ever since. The skeleton is about 4.4 million years old, which predates the famous Lucy fossil by over a million years.
Whoa, that is really old. Are they the same species?
Actually, they found teeth and bits and pieces of other Ardipithecus individuals that may be nearly 6 million years old.
Ooh.
And no, Ardi and Lucy are not the same species. In fact, Lucy is from a genus called Australopithecus. But they both inhabited the Great Rift Valley of ancient Ethiopia. Being older than Lucy, you might expect Ardi to be very chimpanzee-like. But Tim White, a paleontologist at the University of California, Berkeley, says that while Ardipithecus probably did climb trees like a chimpanzee, it also walked upright on land.
In fact, you wouldn't have recognized it as a chimpanzee had you seen it. It lacked the knuckle-walking specializations that we see in chimpanzees. It lacked specializations for aggression and a particular mating practice that modern chimpanzees have. It lacked the specializations toward frugivory. It shows that all those things arose independently in the chimpanzee, and we have never been chimpanzee-like in those specializations. Instead, we each evolved from a last common ancestor that was a primate that can only be retrieved from the fossil record. We haven't found that yet, but right now, Ardipithecus takes us closer than we've ever been.
He says that the large dissimilarities between the chimpanzees and Ardipithecus means that hominids may actually have diverged from chimpanzees several million years earlier than previously thought, as far back as 9 million years, in fact. Another surprise finding was evidence that Ardipithecus most likely lived in a woodland habitat as opposed to the savanna. He says that surrounding the Ardipithecus fossils were fossils of thousands of animals and seeds that were indicative of a forested environment.
Many people thought that bipedality and the earliest hominids had evolved in more open savanna settings.
The Ardipithecus research team published its findings today in a series of articles appearing in Science Magazine. You can learn all about it at www.sciencemag.org.
Thanks, Suzanne. That is an amazing story, and not the only one this week. I was at the Johns Hopkins Applied Physics Laboratory in Laurel, Maryland, which was mission control for the Messenger spacecraft mission. The Messenger spacecraft left Earth over 5 years ago on a mission to attain orbit around the planet Mercury in 2011. And recently, in fact, just this week, it took its last big step toward that goal by skimming by the surface of Mercury at a height of just 228 kilometers. That's 142 miles. Mission design lead engineer Jim McAdams says they hit their spot with unbelievable accuracy.
In all that time, 1.5 times around the sun, over 1 billion kilometers, we're now missing the altitude that we're shooting for by about 1/3 of 1 kilometer.
Now, despite that amazing accuracy, the mission didn't go completely without a hitch. Right after the closest encounter, Mission Control lost contact with the spacecraft for some tense minutes. There was a malfunction. The spacecraft went into a safe mode.
Sounds like you were on the edge of your seat, Bob.
Yeah, it was very tense. And what made it even more tense was right after the spacecraft malfunctioned, it went behind the planet Mercury. So it was in what's called occultation, which means that they can't get any signal to or from it anyway. So everyone just had to sit tight until it emerged from behind the planet to see if it had fixed itself. And indeed, the spacecraft reconfigured itself, sent back a signal that said it was all right. And they ran some tests on it and found that it is fully operational and it's ready for its final encounter and full orbit in 2011. Next, Justin Warner learned about the origin of makeup.
Cosmetics have been used by human cultures all over the world for thousands of years, and on balance, they're used mainly by women. The work of Gettysburg University psychologist Richard Russell may help explain why. He's found that women's faces have slightly higher contrast features than men's. That is, for every ethnicity, women's eyes and lips are slightly darker compared to their skin.
Facial contrast on its own is a strong enough cue to make a face look male or female. So if you increase the contrast, then the face looks female, and if you decrease it, it looks male.
What's more, he's found that people rate higher contrast female faces as more feminine and attractive. But for male faces, they prefer less contrast.
And it turns out that I found the same result whether I made the features lighter and darker and kept the skin constant, or if I kept the features constant and made the rest of the skin darker or lighter.
In his latest paper, he compared pictures of women both with and without makeup that they applied themselves.
And in all of the faces that I measured, the faces with cosmetics had greater contrast than without cosmetics. And this is because what the women did was make the eyes and the lips darker while keeping the rest of the face approximately the same.
Putting all this together, Russell concludes that the basic effect of makeup is to make a face look more female. If you are in fact female, that probably makes you more attractive, whereas if you're male, it's a minus. So it's possible that subtle biological differences, and not just cultural conventions, have made cosmetic use so gender lopsided.
Thanks, Justin. Finally today, Suzanne has some bad news about what might be lurking in your shower.
The whole point of taking a shower is to get clean, which makes a recent study rather disturbing. Microbiologist Norman Pace and his colleagues at the University of Colorado at Boulder tested shower heads and found that they contained 100 times the concentration of harmful bacteria as tap water. Pace notes that these bugs can hitch a ride on water vapor particles when you turn the shower on.
And many aerosols that are generated by a shower head have particle size in the 20 micron range, and that's small enough to penetrate the deep airways and also carry along any bacteria that happen to be entrained.
The chief concern is Mycobacterium avium, a lung pathogen that mainly affects people with weakened immune systems. If that includes you, Pace suggests using a faucet-like shower head that minimizes spray, or just taking a bath instead.
Thanks, Suzanne. Well, that's it for this week. Next week, we'll tell you how monarch butterflies navigate their way to Mexico during their fall migration. And we'll answer listeners' question about whether bees really die when they sting you. But if you can't wait that long for your science fix, listen in to the Science Update Podcast Daily Edition every day, Monday through Friday. You can find it on our website, scienceupdate.com, or at iTunes. Thanks for listening. I'm Bob Hirshon for AAAS, the Science Society.